The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on Exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 AM KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives, which are open 24/7 to the public and are free and are a world and growing cosmic resource, are www.exopoliticsradio.com. And once again, we want to welcome our listeners on Paranormal Radio Network, where we appear on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time. And we want to welcome their listeners in 282 U.S. cities and 92 countries. I'm your elusive but ever-present host, Alfred Weber. And today, we would like to invite you on this, the final show of our third season. Yep. Today, Exopolitics Radio marks its third season to very gifted author and researcher Jean Eisenhower, who is, yes, she's a blood relative of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, another extraterrestrial contactee reported. And Jean Eisenhower writes about and has experienced MKUltra, COINTELPRO, Galactic COINTELPRO, the gray type of extraterrestrial that has been allied with the permanent war economy and the upper dimensional extraterrestrials. And she's written a very, very important book. And having experienced a number of those phenomena myself, I really commend that to all of our audience out there, especially those of you who have experienced any of those programs, because I think that she's managed to explicate and illuminate many of the interrelationships among these. And I mentioned to her, and I do believe that indeed she was targeted by MKUltra initially and by COINTELPRO and Galactic COINTELPRO precisely because she was a blood relative of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, and her emergence into upper dimensional extraterrestrial reality is a tour de force of how these programs have operated in our society over the past decades. Well, for our official Exopolitics Radio commentary this week, we're in transition once again on so many developments on our fair planet that we'd like to sort of take the running temperature, as it were, of the U.S. presidential race. And one of our Exopolitics Radio commentators or guests who has been on here, Mr. Grant Cameron, has given a scorecard to the final three candidates, the Republican John McCain, Senator John McCain, and the two Democrats, Senator Obama and Senator Clinton. This leaves out two of the Green Party candidates, one being former Representative Cynthia McKinney, who I had the pleasure of being a speaker with at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Conference in February 2007 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and of having very deep discussions with her of my experience with the proposed 1977 Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study, which she was very interested in, and also Mr. Ralph Nader, both of whom are vying for the Green Party nomination for president. And we don't know, of course, what Mr. Nader's position is on extraterrestrial disclosure, and I'm not sure if Cynthia McKinney has come out with a public position on that as yet. But in a very interesting article, which you can read by going to www.exopolitics.com and also to Grant Cameron's website, www.presidentialufo.com, he grades McCain, Obama, and Clinton on three different dimensions: their positions on UFOs, UFO disclosure, their positions on space generally, and their positions on transparency. And it's interesting, they're kind of all over the map. Just very briefly, McCain kind of comes off with the best overall score, I would say, in some sense. McCain and Clinton, and Obama really comes off the worst with regard to space issues, according to this view. And let's look at McCain's first. According to Grant Cameron, McCain has a B on UFOs, a B plus on space, and a C on transparency. And the B plus on space comes from McCain's statements that he was very enamored on Mars since he was a child, that he supports missions to Mars and a strong major role of space exploration, and that he will continue a strong exploration policy, space exploration policy. And his B grade on UFO disclosure comes from his statements that, quote, speaking of UFOs, it is UFOs are always of great interest to me. It is always of great interest. And then he went on to make statements about the Phoenix Lights, which is when, of course, on the 10th anniversary, Exopolitics Radio was launched, and that these have never been fully explained. And he has asked to task the U.S. Air Force and other government agencies to provide information on the Phoenix Lights. He was also asked by Chris Wallace at Fox if he had seen a UFO as a Navy pilot, and McCain replied, "I can't say that I did, but I kept looking at all times." Clinton, by contrast, gets a B-plus on UFOs, an A on space, and a C-plus on transparency. And if we look at her grades, according to Grant Cameron, the A on space comes from her doubling NASA and FAA's R&D budgets, and her always having supported the space program. She wanted to be an astronaut, and as a 14-year-old girl, she wrote to NASA to become an astronaut, and was told that at that time they were not taking women. She has voted in favor of Senate bills to add $1 billion to NASA's budget in 2008, so she's fairly strong on that. With regard to UFOs, Clinton was clearly the point person in an effort by Lawrence Rockefeller to bring UFO disclosure to the Clinton White House. And according to researcher William LaParle, she was almost an equal mover with Lawrence Rockefeller on the issue of disclosure. And it is known that Hillary, while First Lady, tried to collect UFO information from UFO researchers. And in a conversation with Rob Simone in February 2008, she did not try to hide her UFO role during the Clinton administration. She has not mentioned UFOs in any campaign speech, as it does not seem to be an issue that she thinks it will help her. Now, what is interesting is that if we come to Barack Obama, who is kind of in some ways the most unusual candidate, he gets the highest grade on governmental transparency, which is an A from Grant Cameron, but he gets a whopping F on space issues. And the reason for that is that Obama's website clearly spells out that the money to finance his proposed $18 billion education plan will come from delaying the NASA Constellation program to return humans to the moon in 5 years. And Obama has downplayed the role of future manned space flights, saying the next president would need a practical sense of what investments deliver the most scientific and technological spinoffs. Now, this is in the context of what they call the second moon race, which is really the first Mars race. And that is most of the rest of the world. I mean, India, China, Japan, the European countries are, you know, and many, many other smaller countries are really gearing up to take humankind out into the solar system, which is the future economic engine and the future kind of vision engine, and certainly our future heritage in space. And to really cut back on this is a way to keep humanity inside the evolutionary cul-de-sac in which it finds itself. I'm kind of quoting from Gregory Bateson in a small little group seminar that I sat in with him a number of years ago when I was with the New York City Environmental Protection Administration. Now, Obama also gets the lowest grades on UFO disclosure. Grant Cameron gives him a C, as opposed to a B for McCain and a B-plus for Clinton. Obama and UFO disclosure, despite Obama's lack of interest in life in outer space, his naive view of complete transparency make him quite open to releasing any UFO files he could find, despite the fact that he's an unbeliever. Okay? Obama now has major backing from Bill Richardson, who has a background related to UFOs. However, in the Democratic debate, he spun it away from UFOs and from outer space. He says, you know, we have to take care of terrestrial matters first. Well, you know, stop the war, don't increase the defense budget as you're planning to do, and don't plan for Armageddon as your defense budget is planning for, and you'll be fine. And asked about the truth embargo on UFOs by the Washington Post, Obama's spokesman said, we're more focused on lifting the government-imposed truth embargo issues on things like the war in Iraq, i.e. they don't answer the question directly. And overall, there was quite a revelation recently when it appears as though John McCain is the first of the final three candidates of McCain, Clinton, and Obama to be overtly endorsed, in this case, in March 20th, 2008, by Lord Rothschild, the putative head of the City of London and of the House of Rothschild. And the City of London, as you may recall, is a 677 quasi-independent jurisdiction at the heart of London. It's the old Roman city at the heart of London. And even the Queen of England has to ask sort of ceremonial permission to enter it. It's ruled over by a committee of 12 banks, headed by the Bank of England and mediated by the House of Rothschild, whose net worth is $100 trillion, the largest on the planet. And under the headline, Lord Rothschild backs John McCain, the Washington Post informed us that John McCain had a fundraiser with Lord Rothschild by kind permission of Lord Rothschild, OMGBE, and the Honorable Nathaniel Rothschild on March 20th. And this was an invitation-only event. Attire was listed as, quote, lounge suit. Quote, the time to buy is when blood is running in the streets. This remark was made by an earlier Nathan Rothschild, the one who reduced the Bank of England's gold reserves by 100,000 pounds by cashing hundreds of small notes, almost sinking that institution because the bank would not cash one of his larger notes. Now, those of you who do follow these matters understand what the function of the House of Rothschild and the City of London is, as corresponds to the House of Rockefeller, which functions as the City of London does, and the House of Rothschild on the European end, the House of Rockefeller, which is whose net worth has been estimated as $10 trillion as opposed to $100 trillion. Both of these entities are at the heart of the extraterrestrial truth embargo. And their candidate is John McCain. And so the query that I raised on the internet this week, which got a very good response, is this why the two Democratic candidates are self-annihilating? And that's the end of our Exopolitics Radio official commentary. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned for our feature interview with author and researcher Gene Eisenhower. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and today we have a very special guest who is here to share a very special book, an extraordinary book, one of those books that you come across, and it's a book that you'd really like to recommend to your friends and give them your copy so they can read it. And that book is Rattlesnake Fire, and that person and author is Gene N. Eisenhower, who has a BA in Media Arts, Broadcast Journalism, with a minor in Religion and Philosophy, and a Master of Fine Arts in Nonfiction Creative Writing, both from the University of Arizona in Tucson. She was a former associate editor of the International Permaculture Drylands Journal, an award-winning broadcast producer and writer, an author, designer, and publisher of the 2003 and 2004 Almanac Datebook Journal for Southern Arizona, and a freelance journalist. Jean is also a certified transpersonal hypnotherapist residing in Silver City, New Mexico, and you can obtain her book and see more of her writings, her book Rattlesnake Fire, at her website, which is www.rattlesnakefire.net. And I first met Jean at the 2005 Extraterrestrial and Dolphins Civilizations Conference in Kona, Hawaii, when she became involved in promotion of the Kona Declaration for Extraterrestrials and World Peace. This was the Extraterrestrials, Civilizations, and World Peace Conference. So I've been watching her book come into the birthing, and without further ado, Jean, welcome to Exopolitics Radio.
Thank you very much, Alfred. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, exopolitics is the new political science of outer space. So we're looking at your book through that particular lens. And tell me, why did you write this book?
I wrote the book because I believe that my experience is something that hasn't been written about before, and that is a conjunction of a number of experiences that people might have, specifically the alien contact and mind control experiments, which I believe I was subject to as a child. I believe there's plenty of evidence. And we've all heard people talk about the men in black, the government agents, apparently, who seem to come around when people, well, a lot of people, have their become conscious of their alien contact. But no one's talked about government agents as having anything to do with mind control work. And so when I became aware of that, my first thought was, why me? Why would I have to have two of these extraordinarily weird things going on in my life? And then it finally occurred to me that maybe they're related. And I'm not exactly sure how they're related, but I think it's a pretty important thing to consider.
Well, you say on page 225 of your book, it took me until the final day I was completing this book to realize consciously that not only were political activists being monitored, but so were contactees, and both were subject to well-organized ridicule campaigns. While I knew contactees were being ridiculed, I hadn't realized it was an organized campaign until I read Michael Sala's article on Galactic COINTELPRO. Could you share some of your experiences that you think you were being targeted by Galactic COINTELPRO?
Well, I'd been having the government in my life before I became conscious of any alien contact because I had been an environmental activist. And this is another little part of the picture. We know that a lot of alien contactees are very interested in the environment. So I'd been an environmental activist for quite a while, since the late 80s. And another strange coincidence, just weeks before I started entertaining the idea that I had been a mind control subject as a child, I had just finished up a six-week trial in which I was a media activist. It was against the FBI. The FBI was found guilty and paid damages of $4.4 million. It was a historic trial, and I had been a main media activist working full-time during the trial. So I got home and started feeling like people were watching me. And, of course, I chalked that up to what I thought was, I attributed it to my environmental activism. And this continued to go on for years, and I kind of wondered why, because I wasn't doing anything else. I did the trial, but I had kind of dropped out of activism for quite a while. Now, when I first became conscious of having alien contact, it was 2 years after the trial, but right after the trial I had become aware of the mind control patterns in my life. So when the government, the sensations of my email being monitored, my phone being tapped, my home being broken into. There was excellent evidence of my home being broken into, but nothing being done other than, suddenly things seemed weird with the phone. I chalked it all up to activism, but wondered why when it was so long ago. And so I was able to just ignore it. I was able to keep compartmentalizing. everything that seemed to be that I was being watched, I just chalked up to government stuff related to old activism, and I wondered why they were still bothering me when I wasn't an activist anymore. And it took me quite a while to realize that they weren't two separate things and they were connected.
Right. Now, one of the remarkable things about your story is that you seem to have been the focus of so many of these different programs of both terrestrial actors and extraterrestrial actors. And one can identify, number one, Galactic COINTELPRO, number two, MK Ultra, or the Sophisticated Mind Control Program, number two, at least two different types of extraterrestrials. That is the sort of, let's call them the grays or the extraterrestrials that are associated with the military abductions, and then the upper dimensionals who are more certainly ethical and more associated with positive human evolution. Plus, one can see evidence. I'm remembering that scene when you had a new house and you were thinking of going to Mexico and you brought some people in to caretake the house. Those were seemed to be a classic profile of COINTELPRO, of what we call gang stalking. So that was yet another program that seems to come in there. Plus, I would say that yet another facet called spiritual emergence. And yet, not to end there, all of the facets that you had to deal with as a result of what we can call MK Ultra-induced institutional sexual abuse, which appears to have occurred in infancy, leading to multiple personality disorder. And it's a wonder how your spirit could sort all of this out. And could you just give us a picture of your spiritual evolution through all of this?
Oh, wow, that's such a big picture. Like, I wrote 250 pages.
Right. I understand. Sort of time travel us through it.
Okay. Well, first, for the listener's sake, I've had three different psychologists read my book, and they confirm my sanity for what that's worth. And Dr. Ralph Metzner, who wrote the foreword to my book, he's also a psychologist. I've done something pretty unusual, and I credit it with having gone out to the desert to be a hermit. Because when you get yourself away from civilization and all the schedules and bells and whistles that are so ubiquitous in this culture, and you let go of time, and you sit quietly, and you watch the sunrise every morning, and you watch the sunset every evening, and you watch the hawks, and you relax into the rhythms of nature, it's incredibly healing. And I am so grateful that I had the ability to do that. And one of the psychologists who I've become friends with via the internet is Dr. James Gunn, and he's written a lot about multiple personality, and he says that he hasn't heard of people being able to heal themselves without a therapist. But he did recognize that I had something really unusual happen, and you'll remember in the book I talked about the integrating woman coming in. This was a spiritual entity who came to me and helped me with my healing. So it wasn't that I didn't have help. I had spiritual help, and she helped pull my parts together, and I had some phenomenal experiences because I had so much time to be very, very introspective. I was able slowly to welcome back the parts of me that were fractured.
You've been listening to our feature interview with author and researcher Jean Eisenhower. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll now continue with our feature interview with author and researcher Jean Eisenhower and her new book, Rattlesnake Fire. Thank you. Now, just to go back and parse this from the beginning, could you walk us through your going back to your memories of infancy forward? I know that it's a tall order to do in 5 minutes or less, but just to give readers an idea of how you were remarkably able to deconstruct your life and thereby deconstruct the influence of all of these programs.
Okay, well, all of the parts started coming back in a real chaotic manner. I believe that whatever spirits are helping us, plus our own infinite spirit, they know what we can handle, and they give it to us in little bits. And sometimes it feels like more than we can handle, and there were certainly times where I felt that I would just rather leave this life than continue to put myself together. But one of the first and most disturbing recollections of abuse that I had was as a baby, and I remembered, you know, having my diaper removed and being sexually tortured and mutilated inside me. And I left my body at that time, and I looked down on the people in the room, and that was really a disturbing thing to remember. I don't remember much more until, well, I had to be in my late 40s before I remembered or realized that I have total amnesia for 2 years of my childhood, and they just happen to be the exact same 2 years that MKUltra uses children, ages 6 and 7. So I have a really great memory. I remember, actually, I once drew the floor plan of the house that we lived in when I was 14 months old, which really freaked out my mom, and she confirmed that. I didn't know how young I was, but she said, "You couldn't remember that. You were 14 months old when we moved." So, you know, I could have been even younger. Anyway, I remember scores of things from preschool and kindergarten, and then I have almost total amnesia for first and second grade. Later on, I remembered that I had another memory that went somewhere in there in first or second grade, and if you were an art therapist, you would realize that I was really disturbed because what I remember was I was supposed to draw a picture of a tree, and I painted this tree leaned sideways, outlined in black, with black wind drawing, you know, flying by and black leaves drawing by, and that's the only thing I remember from these 2 years of amnesia. So when I read about MKUltra using children at that age, that was really chilling. The reason why it was chilling to me was because I was already starting to feel all sorts of resonance in my body when I was reading about MKUltra. It just felt so familiar and so real. And then I started coming up with these details that were really exact. Another one that I thought that I should tell you, 8 years before I ever read about MKUltra, I had just started becoming conscious of my splittedness, my multiple personality, which I think everybody has to some degree, just some of us have it worse than others. So I was drawing a picture of my different alters. I wasn't even sure that these were really alters or just personality facets, but I thought it would be an interesting way, maybe productive somehow, to draw them and see what I would learn about myself. So I drew these different personality facets, and then I had this funny idea that I could ask inside if there were any more alters that I should draw. And as soon as I asked that question, I saw something, just as clear as can be, two little children, but they looked like the little international symbols. You know, they didn't have any features at all. They were just outlines. And one was pure red, the other was pure blue, and the two of them were in a dark forest, and they ran from behind one tree to behind another, and they stayed hidden. But they just let me see them for that short period of time. And I was so shocked to ask inside and have a vision. And so I added them to my picture. I dated it, made photocopies, gave one to my therapist at the time, gave one to a girlfriend, and then I think I made 3 copies. I kept another and stored it, so I have my original and my copy. And 8 years later, I'm reading about MKUltra. I'm getting sick because so much of it feels familiar and real and true. And then I came across something where they talked about, well, programs that have names, and this one of them gave children colors, and they said, "You are red, or you are blue, or you are green." And these colors that the kids were assigned indicated the sort of programming that they were in.
Right. Now, just to move quickly through this time, you're an Eisenhower, and you are of the blood lineage of another famous contactee, and that's President Dwight David Eisenhower. And I think you mentioned that your grandfather was his second cousin. And we've discussed, of course, there are multiple witnesses and verified evidence of a reported contact, perhaps more than one, between then President Eisenhower and extraterrestrial ambassadors at Edwards Air Force Base in the spring of 1954, and perhaps others after that with other species of extraterrestrials. We don't know. And these were very, at least the one at Edwards Air Force Base was very important in that these ET ambassadors asked him to terminate the U.S. nuclear weapons programs because it was horrible for the environment. And we know that if you look at contactees tend to run in families. So lo and behold, you, contactee, and President Dwight D. Eisenhower, contactee, are both blood relatives. And I know that you don't go into depth in this, but I'm just saying from an exopolitical frame, that's an objective frame that exists there. And one could question as to each of these programs that the fact that you're a blood relative of President Dwight D. Eisenhower and bear his name is very important to your story and mission. And I sort of put that to you. What do you say, Jean Eisenhower?
Well, I don't really know. I just know what you just told me. And I know that Dwight Eisenhower often used to come with Mamie to our town where we lived in Paradise Valley, Arizona, but we never saw him. And I remember thinking sometimes that my parents were a little miffed, you know, that we never got visited. So I don't think that there was a close connection to our family. But in the town that we lived in when I was a child, in Merced, California, we lived very, very near the Secretary of State, Stuart Udall. As a matter of fact, he was in our neighborhood. He came to at least one Christmas party that I remember, and his yard just about backed up on our yard. You know, he was in a cul-de-sac on, you know, the other side. And then his cousin, Addison Udall, was my pediatrician when I was a child.
Uh-huh.
So somehow, you know, we did have these connections to government.
Yeah, this is the Secretary of the Interior in the Carter administration.
Stuart Udall, he was also Secretary of State way back in 1960.
I see. Well, now, following just that note on extraterrestrial contactees, could you walk us through your various extraterrestrial contact experiences of the different varieties?
Well, the first thing that I became conscious of was one evening going to sleep early and waking up from having been asleep, maybe in theta state or something, and suddenly feeling that everything's vibrating. Well, I think I woke up first with the racket. I realized the vibration in my body later, but I had a metal bed frame stored underneath the bed that I was sleeping in, and it was a cement floor, and that frame was making a racket. And it woke me up, and I suddenly realized everything was vibrating, the bed, me. And I was alarmed at first because it reminded me of 2 years earlier when I had the exact same thing happen while I was in working on the trial. And at that time, I thought it was the federal government doing psychological operations and doing something to me, and I chalked it up to the government. And so when this happened again, I was alarmed again. And then I did the same thing that I had done 2 years earlier. Suddenly, I had this emotional switch. And there wasn't any reason to it. Nothing in my mind registered as a reason for the emotional switch. But in my body, my emotions changed to recognition, familiarity, calm. And my mind said something like, oh, this, as if I'm remembering. And then I relaxed, and I felt like I was going in willingly. Going into where, I don't know. But I was going in, and I knew that I was going to something good, or at least that was the feeling. But what it was, I have no idea. The next morning I woke up, and I was really disturbed by it. I thought that the emotional switch had been something, some high technology. I assumed that because it was almost identical to what I had experienced 2 years ago during the FBI trial, I thought it was the FBI again. And I didn't know why they would bother me 2 years later. I hadn't been an activist, and or hadn't been doing much activism. And oddly, I had to get to work, but I picked a book off the shelf and sat down to read just to try to take my mind off things because it had upset me so much. And lo and behold, the book that I picked up was Whitley Strieber's Communion. And I had read it a couple years earlier just because I wanted to see what else, you know, what the rest of the world was reading, and not because I was interested. I had a lot of resistance to this subject, and as soon as I came across Whitley's description of the vibration that heralded his being taken, I just about melted in the couch. I couldn't believe it, but it explained it, and it seemed to explain it. And I accepted that this might be what's happening. And frankly, I almost thought I'd rather it be feds, you know, than aliens, because everyone laughs at you when you say you've had an alien contact. So I continue to have experiences very much like this a couple times a week for months.
Yeah, you mean, meaning that would actual beings come to you, or was it more of an energy thing or what?
Unlike a lot of people, unlike Whitley, unlike Jim, I only saw one once. Mm-hmm. All I would do was wake up out of my sleep, realize that I was vibrating again, and go, oh, here we go again. And then I'd be gone, wouldn't remember anything, and I'd wake up in the morning. Now, I did have evidence that things were happening. Well, one of the early times, I woke up because I felt like I'd been hit between the eyebrows by a beam of energy. And I quickly tried to talk myself out of it. I tried to say, oh, you, and I actually, something registered on my eyeballs. So I tried to tell myself it was lightning. But the window ahead of me was not where I felt very clearly that this beam had come from. It came through the eave and the roof and the wall. And as soon as I registered that, I realized that I was immobilized. And I began praying and realized that I didn't even have control of the thought speech center of my brain. I couldn't even pray silently to myself except with incredible difficulty. And that really terrified me. And I went into unconsciousness in a state of stark raging terror. And then I didn't, the next morning I didn't remember anything. So I didn't have any more experiences like that beam. I almost forgot the most important part. While I'm laying there in terror, I see outside the window beside me, this is the only being that I ever saw. He seemed to be one of the tall ones who are formed something like the grays, but they're the taller ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed to be sort of gliding outside the window from north to south, and I only saw him for a couple seconds. And that was when I went into unconsciousness, very, very frightened. And then I continued to have the experiences a couple times a week, like I said, week after week for months, of waking up, realizing that I was vibrating, and then and one night, things suddenly changed. I would wake up in the morning, and I had scratches all over my arms. Now, I'm living in the desert where there are lots of mesquite trees, and they have really serious thorns on them. And I looked at those, and you always want to come up with any other more logical explanation. And so I thought, well, maybe when I was gathering firewood, I scratched up my arms. But they didn't look like firewood scratches. They looked like thorn scratches. But I still was able to put it out of my mind. And it happened quite a few nights in a row. And finally, one morning, I woke up, and I had a 3/4-inch thorn embedded in my thumb. And I knew that I hadn't gone to bed with that. I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to pain, and I would have noticed that. So I've never been a sleepwalker, and suddenly that thorn was there. And I finally started saying to my boyfriend, well, it seems like the aliens are like dragging me through the mesquite trees. You know, they're not being very nice. And I had been going along with Whitley Strieber's earlier points of view that this is all a spiritual exercise and it's good for us, and we should just basically ask to be conscious. So that had been my prayer. Please, I'd like to be conscious. And after this, I changed my prayer. I said, if this is good for me, I'd like to be conscious. But, spirit helpers of mine, if this is not just frightening because it's new, it's frightening because it's really bad, I'd like it to stop. Please protect me. And lo and behold, it stopped.
And then you have gone on to have the positive type of experiences, as I understand it.
Yeah, I've had quite a few positive types, but they're kind of hard to differentiate between the shamanic experiences that I was having before all this began. And to talk about the shamanic element is probably worth another show. But people like John Mack have had shamans, medicine people from continents all over the world come to tell him that alien contact is just part of the shamanic initiation.
Sure, and that fits into a rubric that some call spiritual emergence. Thank you for being with us and for having the courage to bring this utterly transparent work, Rattlesnake Fire, a memoir of extra-dimensional experience, and I think a work of literature as well. It's beautiful, lyrical prose, I really recommend to everyone, Gene, and we look forward to having you on the program again as this cosmic story unfolds.
Thank you very much, Alfred.
We've been with Gene Eisenhower, author of Rattlesnake Fire, a memoir of extra-dimensional experience. You can read more about it and obtain it at her website, which is www.rattlesnakefire.net. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, here we are in our final show of Season 3 of Exopolitics Radio. We're going to be welcoming you back next week with our traditional creative hiatus between Season 3 and Season 4 with fresh and peppery weekly commentaries. And it seems as though we're living out once again the extraterrestrial context communication theory that was set out in blueprint at the Chicago O'Hare sighting of November 7, 2006, the midterm election day, which said essentially elections are really important. And it seems that the dynamics now are quite healthy and also quite transparent. Here we have Lord Rothschild making his move on behalf of the Rothschilds, and John McCain, the favorite son of Arizona, where the Phoenix Lights took place on March 13th, 1997, and where Exopolitics Radio was launched 10 years later on March 10th, 2007, what we like to call Cosmic Trigger Radio. And John McCain, the senator from Arizona, is now the favorite son of Lord Rothschild. And the Rothschilds, you know, founded the Federal Reserve and basically run the United States as its private reserve. And that the United States is run as a vassal state of the City of London is now only becoming transparent to the hoi polloi of the United States, in these last several years. I mean, George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney work for the City of London. They do not work for the United States people. And I think that Cheney proved that in this last week when they asked him. They said, well, you know, most people are against the war in Iraq and against bombing Iran. And he said, so? Get it? So this election, as set out by the extraterrestrial communication theory and that craft from, anywhere from 20 to 60 feet wide that came down on November 7, 2006. Here we have the dynamics of a Clinton-Obama duologue that is going all the way to the convention now. It's actually quite healthy because, number one, it makes an attack on Iran more difficult, and that was a scenario to try and start World War III and also to do more low-level nuclear bombing of the world through depleted uranium. It makes a second domestic 9/11 more difficult because everybody's focused on democracy. You know, it gives good ratings, as they say. The U.S. presidency, as was found in a poll at the Davos conference, makes, quote, good, cheap entertainment. That's how Americans see the U.S. president, quote, as cheap entertainment. And it makes the Federal Reserve takes extra measures to keep on pumping money into the system and keeping their system afloat and not throwing the U.S. economy into, you know, free fall because they have to keep it propped up until 2009. They cannot do it through an election year. So this is also a good time to press each of these final three on disclosure. That is Clinton, Obama, McCain, the Lord Rothschild favorite, and also the two Green Party candidates, Ralph Nader and Cynthia McKinney. So I suggest that you people out there, and you've written to us all the time, you can go and send us your feedback at www.exopoliticsradio.com, but go out and go to exopolitics.com. You have all there. You'll see all of the contact information for all of the candidates. Go and ask them about disclosure. And so we now have the best of all possible worlds. You know, they aren't going to bomb Iran. They're not going to bomb the United States in a second 9/11 false flag attack. Rothschild's trying to get it McCain in. Well, that's transparent now. And Obama and Clinton are going to, you know, do a rope-a-dope strategy until the convention. So let's go for it. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Finnis Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director Arvi Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and come on, stand up and call the candidates and say, where do you stand on disclosure? Do something. Just don't listen here. Go out and do something today. Thank you.